This is Remarkable. Welcome to Remarkable, a marketing podcast for podcasters who aren't marketers. I'm your host and teacher, Dave Mooring, and I want to know what it takes to stand out, get noticed, and build a committed audience of listeners and fans. I'm on a quest to find out what makes a podcast remarkable. And I invite you to join me each week as I interview other podcasters, experts, and marketers. The Remarkable Podcast is part of the Super Simple Podcast Network. If you'd like additional marketing resources, early access to my free podcast marketing course, and to be notified when I release future episodes, head on over to theremarkablepodcast.com. This is episode number 4. In this episode of Remarkable, you get to hear a fascinating interview I had with an entrepreneur turned podcaster who's made podcasting a full-time job since stumbling into it less than 2 years ago. Through his podcast, he's interviewed over 200 entrepreneurs and business owners, including Seth Godin, James Altucher, Guy Kawasaki, and Gretchen Rubin. He's the author of a best-selling book, co-author of a podcasting course, and co-host of another successful podcast about podcasting. This was a fun interview, and we cover a ton of useful tips and insights. You'll learn the best way to cold email guests, how to genuinely connect with your audience and build raving fans that tell others about you, how to structure initial deals for sponsorships, and how to respond to the question, how many downloads do you have when you don't have big numbers? He also shares the one thing he's done that's had the most impact on his rapid growth and success, as well as the one mistake he made that destroyed his listenership and download numbers temporarily, and how you can avoid the same mistake. On a lighter note, you'll learn the selfish reason he started a podcast in the first place and why he's using a microphone that Pat Flynn gave his 9-year-old daughter. Here's the host of Hack the Entrepreneur, John Naster. John, welcome to the show. I appreciate you coming on and speaking with me for a little while today.
Ooh, Dave, I'm really, really excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
So, for the people that don't know a lot about you or what you do, why don't you give us a little bit of background? What were you doing before podcasting?
Is there a time before podcasting? That was like a year ago or something.
Yeah.
So I'm a Canadian. I guess you could call me an online entrepreneur. I've been full-time for almost 4 years online now, doing random wacky things, building products, writing stuff, doing those kinds of things. And last summer, I got into podcasting. I should actually go back. About 2 years ago, I did a podcast with somebody locally. So I live most of the time, or at least half the year, I live in a small town in Canada in the middle of nowhere. So I'm super, super isolated from everyone. And there's one guy here that I ended up finding on Twitter that's actually in this city, and he was obsessed with like the technical side of podcasting. He's really, really good at it, but he didn't know really what to podcast about. So we just started having conversations at the coffee shop, and it was like, man, we should just like do a thing about like online business or something. I can just talk about it, and because I love talking about it, but I don't really know the technical side. So he did all of it. And so we did the normal, went to like 13 or 14 or 15 episodes or something, and then just kind of fizzled away. And then I went to a conference in the Philippines and met some really, really smart people, some really, really brilliant podcasters as well. And it was like a mastermind. And so it was understood that I need to start a podcast at some point.
What conference was that?
Tropical Think Tank, Chris Ducker's.
Oh, yeah.
It was the first one in the Philippines. And so Pat Flynn was there. Miren Barakat was there. John Lee Dumas was there. So there was only, I think, 25 of us total. So it was very podcasting-centric in that way, although it wasn't supposed to be. It just worked out that way. And so it was determined that I should start a podcast. And so a few months later, after like stewing on it a bit, which was last summer, mid-July, I just decided to start. And so I spent the summer just recording episodes, did like 22 or 24 episodes, something like that, before launching September 5th, which was like last week. And so I've just hit my 1 year anniversary, and yeah, it's kind of changed my business and changed my life. Actually, it's pretty shocking what podcasting has done for me. But that's sort of how I got into it. And I hated my voice. I typically can't listen to myself still.
Sure.
And I never thought, like, I play drums in a band, but I would never get behind the microphone. I wasn't me. And so the fact that I literally get paid to podcast now, and that like pays my mortgage and stuff, blows my mind.
It's
like, it's like the exact opposite thing that I ever thought that I could be doing. And every time somebody goes on Twitter, emails me and like, man, I love your style and you have that Canadian accent, all these things that I didn't think I did. It's like, I don't think I have a style. I don't think I have a Canadian accent. And I never expected to be good behind a microphone. And I'm still not sure if I am, but I'm working towards it. And now I just really enjoy it. So that's it.
Yeah. Well, first of all, congratulations on hitting that year mark.
Thank you.
From what I understand, a lot of people give up way before that. So the fact that you've stuck with it is a good sign. Tell me a little bit more about what your online business background is. So has that been your profession for quite some time now?
Almost 4 years.
Okay.
And so, yeah, almost 4 years full time, maybe 3.5. Yeah. It was like April 1st, 3 years ago. So that was about 3.5 years ago that I went completely full time online. I had some offline businesses before that. And then, I sold one of those, and then I spent all the money trying to figure out how to start an online business, but not actually doing any of it, just kind of reading and buying stuff. And then right. To the point where I then had to get a job. And then once I got that job again, I was like, I worked the job for almost a year, but built a business on the side and was just like, I'm never going to screw this up again. I'm never going back to just having to work, especially like going to an office and just sitting there. It's not something I can do. So it's not something I'm going to do. And so I just made the leap to online and just started like building software and selling it in small amounts and bigger amounts some places. And that's it. Although I'm completely non-technical still with the podcasting or with building software, I've just sort of partnered with people. It's kind of been my trick to get things done.
Get the right people on the right team.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what was your purpose in starting the podcast other than it sounds like you were told to do so. What did you have a business purpose in mind, or did you just think that it would be a good thing to do because a lot of people are doing it?
No, it's completely selfish. So, and this is, I don't want to say this is before the big renaissance, but like Serial didn't exist yet. If some people can believe that kind of thing, it wasn't everywhere yet. It was massive. And there was people doing really, really well at it. And I was listening to a ton of them, but it was really selfish. As I said, I live in a really, really small town I'm isolated, but I love talking business. And my business, Velocity Page at the time, was doing well. And so I didn't have to work. It was kind of taking care of itself. So I had a few months off and I was like, if I just call up Seth Godin or just email him and say, hey, Seth, do you want to just get on and talk to me for half an hour? Because I'd love to talk to you. He'll say no. But if I'm recording it for a podcast, he'll probably say yes. So I had 30 people on this list of just people I want to talk to. And it was instant. Like I knew who it was and I wanted to talk to those people. I figured the show would last about 2 months. And then I would get to talk to all those people and then it would just fizzle and I'd go on to my business. But within that 2 months, it kind of took off in its own way. And I had to make a decision whether to push it as far as I could or just let it fizzle out. And I decided consciously to push it as far as it could. And I'm still not sure where that is, but it was selfish at the beginning and it kind of got its own traction. And so I went with it.
So you essentially started because you had a list of people that you wanted to talk to and you thought podcasting would give you an opportunity to talk to them.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that's awesome.
It's awesome, right? Like, I'm recording it for a podcast. So sure, I'll talk to you. But otherwise, it's like, no, I don't have time to just talk to you, man.
So how did you come up with the name? Did you have the name, like, while you were recording with people? Or did you already have in mind what the concept would be? And, like, which came first? I mean, you already had the list of people.
Do you mean the name of the show?
Yeah.
Hack the Entrepreneur actually came from a good friend of mine, another person that I met at Tropical Think Tank His name's Gabriel Machuret. It's like Colombian, so I don't know how to pronounce it. Sure. Listening to Gabriel. And brilliant guy. And we were actually going to start after the conference. Then we started talking. We kept a mastermind group going, which still goes to this day once a week. And we were going to do the podcast together, him and I. And then he came up with Hack the Entrepreneur. We were on a walk, and I was talking on Skype to him. We were just going over ideas, and he came. Brilliant guy, terrible follow through. So it was like
he's an ideas guy, right?
He's an ideas guy, and he's do 10,000 things, but don't complete any of them. I do 9,000 things and complete at least one or two of them. but so he came up with it, and I was like, whoa! And then instantly got home and like typed it in and like, how is Hack the Entrepreneur available, like literally just for $10 to buy? To me, it just seemed like hack is such a popular thing, a term that I really don't like, but it's whatever. It works. And it's, so I bought it, right? And then we were going to work together, and he literally, I just gave him like, hey, dude, I need like these 10 questions from you answered. And after like a week of not doing it, I was like, screw this, man, I'm doing it. And so I just emailed him like, sorry, man, can't do it. Jumped on a call. I'm like, not doing it. But can I keep the name? He's like, yeah, of course you can keep the name, man. I'm good at ideas. I'm not good at anything else. And, but he is. He's super good at stuff. He has a great business. But so that was it. He came up with the name. Lots of my friends came up with the questions. It's most of it's not my ideas. It's just me bouncing ideas off of as many people as I could get around me, all virtually, of course, because of where I live.
Right.
But it was just finding people that I trusted on Facebook or Twitter or email and Skype, and just like, can you just listen to this recording? Can you listen to this? Lots of the recordings I did at the beginning didn't get released because I was working out what I was doing. I kind of had an idea of what I wanted to do, and I knew I needed something catchy. I knew I needed something to get people to listen all the way through. I knew I needed something to really make it stand out and be unique. And that's where the hack came from at the end. And then my little essay and like the sound effects, all the things that sounded really cheesy as I was doing it. I'm like, this is either going to be really, really lame or really, really awesome. And I'm still not actually sure which one it is, but it works. So
it's working. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So that's how it came.
So did you have to go back to the people that early on that you didn't release and just tell them, I'm sorry, like, or did you try to re-record?
A couple of them I tried to re-record because it was my fault. So with my show, it's kind of short, and I feel like both my guest and I need to have a certain level of like energy, and we need to really be engaged to make it work.
Yeah.
And that could be my fault or their fault if it doesn't work, and I'm not up to blaming who's who. But I do have people sign off. They check a box on a disclaimer that clearly says that I need a certain thing from both me and my guest for the show, and this might work and it might not. One thing that makes my guests step up their game, because they could be wasting their time by recording and I might not release it. But then without their notice or anything, I can just refuse to publish, which I've done a lot of times, and I just don't get back to them. But if I know that it's totally my fault and I want this person because I know they'll be good on my show, I have gone back to quite a few people and just re-recorded it, and they're totally cool with it because they want it to be good. They want it to work for the audience. And I think that they respect the fact that I understand my audience enough to not release something to them, and that we need to re-record it and make it better.
Yeah, that's great. Is that something, that document, something that you could share or something that we could
share
with the audience?
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. hacktheentrepreneur.com/format. I believe I can give you the link, but it's hacktheentrepreneur.com/format. That's literally, so the email I send to my guests has a link to format, and right at the top of the format in red, there's a notice. It says, due to the nature of the interview process, not all interviews will be published. Hack the Entrepreneur reserves the right to refuse publication for any reason without notice. And then when they go to my meetme.so link, the scheduling link, there's a checkbox they have to agree to the terms of service that they've just read.
Well, that's really helpful. I'll include that link in my show notes for that.
Awesome.
So when you were creating the list of people, who were some of the names on the top of the list that you were really hoping to meet with? I assume Seth Godin was one of them.
Seth Godin was one of them. Patrick McKenzie was another one. Brian Clark was another one who actually didn't get to interview till later in the year. Mm-hmm. who was some of the other ones? I should know this. They had this list. Johnny B. Truitt was one of them,
yep.
who I actually interviewed and never released, which he has to come back on my show. I just keep forgetting to actually get him back on. But I really, really, he's somebody. There was these people sort of like when I originally came online years ago and just was like reading stuff and everything. There was people whose work I was reading and following. And these are the people. And I was like you kind of, Ryan Dice, who I actually didn't get to interview till now.
Mm-hmm.
I just got to interview him. He was one of the original like godfathers of internet marketing at the time I came on. Even though he's a bit shady at the time, but he totally admits it at this point. Who else? There was Seth Godin was definitely on that list. Elon Musk is still on that list.
Yeah, that'll be a tough one.
Yeah, actually, I haven't even tried. I don't think I deserve it yet, so I haven't. Gary Vaynerchuk is on there. He's been scheduled 4 times to be on my show, and we still haven't made it work.
Yeah,
but he will be one of the people. So people, I respect their work. I just want to see how they're thinking. But then, yeah.
So do you get pretty nervous right before the show or leading up to it for the or I guess the interview?
Oh, I freaked out for my first. I literally never interviewed anybody until I interviewed Patrick McKenzie first, and I had no idea. It doesn't follow my format or anything. I just went with it, and I couldn't believe that we were doing it. And then I kind of got better. I used some stuff to cheat. Like I have some sheets that I use, a PDF that I print out now mm-hmm. That I've made that has spots to put in like what I think potential hacks are. And then I just write, I have their name in bold, I have their business name in bold. So I know I can always reference back to it. And then I have a sheet that I keep on, or a PDF that's on my desktop of my computer that has questions in and in like a flow. So I can pull people. I want it to kind of stray off one question at a time, meaning that I don't want to be like Tim Ferriss where we're just going to go down some weird wormhole
right,
and just
right.
disappear. It's just not my style. I want to keep it concise. It's called Hack the Entrepreneur, so it should be quick and hacky, right? So I want to ask a question that I ask everybody, and then they're going to respond. I want to listen, write down stuff as they're going, and then I want to follow up with one question, but only one question. And then I want to, okay, now let's go to here. Now let's go to work. Okay, now let's go to ideas. And so I can always bring it back. And that was... I do that now still, even though I probably don't need to, but it worked for me at the time because I was freaked out that every time the person was talking, I was always like, are they going to stop right now? And I don't know what to ask now. I was freaked out, right? So I just had these things. And so at any time, if they just stopped, I could just be like, okay, there's the question right in front of me. I'll just ask that. And so now I don't know if it's a crutch or just, I think it works for me. So I just keep it and I tweak it so that it can work, but I was freaked out. I still get kind of nervous.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great process. I'm doing something similar where I have kind of a freehand pad that I can jot down things as we go, but also have kind of a list of questions to default back to.
Nice.
So did you have a launch strategy? It sounds like you knew some podcasters and that's kind of what pushed you into it. Did they give you advice on a strategy for building an audience and launching your show, or did you just record, produce, post and cross your fingers?
Yeah, they didn't really give me any advice at that point. And again, I wasn't doing it for the launch and the launch strategy. I was literally doing it for the selfish means of actually getting to have these conversations and then produce them in a unique way and really radio focused with like a definite quick intro, no messing around, just quick, straight to the point, and then do the whole like late night talk show thing where this still drives me crazy when, and I haven't heard your show yet, so I hope, but this drives me crazy when
it's not live yet. So whatever, right, whatever advice you give me, I can make edits.
Okay. So here's my advice. And because this drives me crazy and everybody does this except for like David Letterman, well, who's not doing it anymore, but when they're introducing a guest and when you're introducing a guest on a podcast, almost every 99% of the people start off, okay, John Nastor's on the show today. John Nastor did all this. Rather than building up the tension, rather than my guest today does this, 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 and this. My guest can help you do this. My guest will help you do this. My guest has also done this. Now welcome to the show, John Nastor. The last two words should always be the person's name, not the first two words. Because otherwise you just hear it, and if somebody hasn't heard of me or they're just like, oh, I heard John on 5 other podcasts, they'll kind of clue out. Rather than like building anticipation, like who is this? So there was some TV and radio cues that I really focused on, and I wanted to see if I could make it unique. But then I launched terribly. I launched with three shows, and then I went to like a random schedule. And my first month, I got like hardly any downloads. It was just how it was. But then my second month, it kind of took off. And then my third month was even better. And then it fell apart again. But there wasn't really a plan that I had. There was some things I did. And I really focused on getting ratings and reviews just from people. But it wasn't thought out at the time. I've since made the Showrunner podcasting course. And I had to kind of go back through like my process and be like, what did I do at this stage? What did I do at this stage? What did I do at this stage? And then write it all down. It's like, oh, there was kind of a plan looking back. But at the time, I'm just winging it and like using things from business, using things from marketing that I knew and from experience, what I thought would probably help and work. And then obviously I did have like the email of Pat Flynn and stuff, which does help.
right.
So, but I mean, I didn't have Pat on my show till like episode 90 or something. Right. I still haven't had John Lee Dumas on. Chris Tucker is actually coming out on Monday. So I didn't use those people that I knew and that had kind of got me started. I didn't want to use them as like a platform or
sure.
a springboard because they sure. put their work in. They did it. And also because lots of them are on a ton of shows. So I didn't see the value right away. All the people that I had on right away, I literally had no connection to. It was just blunt emails that it was just like, here we go. This is me. I just want to interview you and here's why you should do it.
Yeah. Any tips for reaching out to people that you don't have a connection to or don't know? I mean, I met you at the podcast movement and Jared, and then I've made some other connections through introductions, but any advice for reaching out kind of, you know, a cold email or cold call to somebody?
Yeah, totally. Use Voila Norbert. Great link for you. Mm-hmm. VoilaNorbert.com is a service where you can type in the person's name. So Jared, say you just mentioned Jared. He works for Copyblogger. So you would just type in Jared, and then you type in the domain where he works, copyblogger.com. It will give you his email address. So a guest that you want that you know works for a place, you can – or and I've even had to do it where it's like I did this with James Altucher. I typed in James Altucher and then Gmail because I'm like, well, everybody has a Gmail account, and it gave me his email address. Mm. And then I sent a form email that I have that is super, super short. And it really has to sell them on the benefits of being on your show. They don't need to know that you're this massive fan. They don't care. They get lots of emails from fans. They want to know what's the benefit to them, right? Like, what is it going to do for them and what's in it for them to be on your show? Who is your audience and how can they help your audience and how will that benefit them and their business? That's all people want to know. Keep it to 6 to 7 sentences if you can, and always include the link. I believe you use Calendly.
Mm-hmm.
Calendly, there's meetme.so. There's a bunch of, they're just scheduling links because you do not want to like ask somebody to be on your show and then email them back and be like, well, how about next Wednesday at 3 p.m.?
Right.
They're like, because as soon as I get that from somebody, I'm just like, no, I can't play this game. Like, I can't go look. And then it's like, oh, then we find a time and then I find out that we're on completely different time zones. And like, just send me a link. I can look what's available for you and I can just choose it. Perfect. It makes it easy. So make it easy, make it short, and make sure you always, always, always provide what's in it for them, not what's in it for you, not how much you love them. People are typically 80% of the time, they're on their phone and they're in the back of an Uber cab and they're getting your email and they don't want like a 10 paragraph thing about how much you love them and how much you've always loved them and how great you'll be on their show. Just tell them what they can do and how they can do it and then make a link there so they can book it instantly from that phone via Uber. It's just the way people work. They're busy.
No,
that's why you want them on your show, right?
So, yeah, and that's good advice. If you don't have a show that's very established and you don't have the numbers, any tips for somebody that's, you know, maybe just launched, maybe has a dozen shows, to what would be the value or how would you go about pitching or how did you go about pitching the value to the first, you know, 2 dozen people before you had something established?
It's a great question. Don't mention numbers. My numbers are great now. I don't mention numbers.
Okay.
Unless somebody replies back, which I think 6 people out of the 200 people I've tried to have on my show or have had on my show have responded, okay, well, what's your audience like? And sometimes I just ignore it. It's like, you know what? It's if it's not worth your time, unless there's 1,000 people listening or 10,000, then whatever. It just, to me, it's too like, what was you, like, to me, it's the whole Gary Vaynerchuk, like one is better than zero.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I mean, seriously, like you have to know the value that you provide and your audience provides. I don't care if your audience is 47 people. If I could email almost anybody and be like, I can get you in front of 47 people in a room today to talk about your ideas and to sell your business to them, they'll say yes. Right. Don't, that's a full small room of people. Once you get up to 200 listeners, that's a big room full of people.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people. Don't underestimate the fact that 200 people are engaged in listening to your show. That's massive. You don't have to tell them that, but use that as confidence that, yes, here is my audience. Not that here's my audience of 226 people on average. It's here's who they are, here's what they want, and here's how your story can provide them value, and you will gain audience from this. It's perfect.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's extremely helpful. So I'm curious, with all your guests so far, who has been the most fascinating person? If does anybody stand out or come to mind as just a really fascinating person that you've interviewed?
Dame Stephanie Shirley was probably, it's the least like any of my other episodes, but it was, I felt really inadequate doing the interview. So Dame Stephanie Shirley, she's, I believe, like 88 years old or 89 years old. Mm-hmm. She started a software company in the late 1950s, early 60s, when it was literally done with punch cards.
Yeah.
The UK. And before that, at like age 2, she was sent on like a train to flee the Nazis without her family to like England. At like 2 years old, and she never like really saw her family again. And then like around like her teens, she decided that she was going to make a life worth like saving, because her parents like spent everything they had left, and they fled over the mountains separately, and then sent her and her sister on a trip. It's the craziest story.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And she literally went on to create this business with punch cards, and like, she got women to start working from home with punch cards when women weren't supposed to be working from home, all this wacky stuff. And she literally created like a multi-billion dollar business that she ended up selling in like the 90s. And then she has given away like hundreds of millions of pounds. And like, it's insane. The story of this lady, and she was introduced to me by another guest I had on, was like, you have to have this. She'd never been on a podcast before. And so I had this wacky conversation with this lady who is older, and she was on an iPad and she had the video on, and I never do video. And it was super early. It was like 4 a.m. my time, because she's in England. And so not good in the mornings. And I had read her book over the few days before. She wrote like this memoir, and it was like a business book memoir type thing. It was amazing. And I was like crying at times. Like, this is crazy. So yeah, Dame Stephanie Shirley, the most amazing story. She just did actually a TED Talk in July in Vancouver too. So that's, you can find that online, I think, soon.
Yeah. I'll link to both of those. That's really fascinating.
Yeah. She was cool. And it's different. So if you listen to that show, it's different than all my other shows. Like, there's not really a starting and an ending point. It was just, we'd had this really cool conversation and it was fun.
So did that kind of open up your new possibilities in your mind for where you can take the show? And have you explored any other, I guess, outside the core circle?
Oh, it's interesting, because it really opened it up to who I can have on the show. And I think that helped a lot. It didn't at the time at all open me up to changing my format. My format's super strict.
Yeah.
But actually today an episode came out with Dane Maxwell from the Foundation. Mm-hmm. And I recorded his episode 6 months ago, I think, and refused to release it. It got really awkward, and the conversation was supposed to end at one point, but then he like starts typing on his computer to people, and then he's like, we should keep this going. And then he starts asking me questions, and it was all weird. Then I was like, I couldn't decide whether I should edit it out and just make it my episode or what. But right. today I released it completely unedited. It's like 50 minutes. All my episodes are 30 minutes, basically. Yeah. This one's 50. And it's nerve-wracking. He curses like a banshee on it. I leave all of it in. I warn people at the beginning, but then I go into my exact same intro, and then we go through. I pull out this hack and have this weird thing that I do. It's really, but so far it's literally been out for like 2 hours now, and I've already got like crazy feedback from people about it, because I really ask for it. I'm like, do you like this? Or like, just tell me if you hate it. That's cool. I really felt like the conversation is worth it. And now just with this initial feedback, it is pushing me to think that maybe I could open up the doors on my format, or else create a side sort of show where some of my guests, we go deeper on things, which I have been told by some people might be interesting, but it's weird. It's an evolution, right? So it's not, when you launch your show, like I'm 130 episodes in now, right? So it's changed a lot. If you listen to my first 20 episodes, then like 21 to 50, you'll see changes, and it sort of evolves. It's like to listen to my show now at episode 130 and be like, wow, I could never come up with like a format like that right at the beginning. It's like, well, no, I didn't either. It's, you kind of have to follow your gut more than anything. Really don't listen to other people. Don't listen to your audience. Your audience doesn't really know sometimes what they want.
Yeah, yeah.
But sometimes you really have to follow your gut and kind of know what direction you want to go, and then take feedback off that. Like, there's people that email me still and like, oh, your hack is completely crappy and blah, blah, blah. Like, whatever, man. The show's not for you. Perfect, right? There's tens of thousands of people that listen to it and love it. I don't care that you don't like it. I don't want everybody to like it. That's fine, right? But if we always listen to those people, we would never find our way. So you really have to trust yourself more than anything. But then when you ask for feedback, then listen and just get feedback on certain aspects maybe. But then take all that feedback in, kind of let it settle inside of you, and then make a judgment call based on what your gut and what your intuition is telling you. Because you're going to have so many people. People are going to hate this, love this, hate this. But it's you, honestly, have to like it. And you have to know that it's going to work for who it is, the audience that you're trying to build. So this is the first time with this episode coming out today. And I'm only going off about this because it's really internally right now. I'm literally...
It's happening,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right before this call, I was just going through stuff on Twitter and in my email and on Facebook and being like, wow, this is really cool. Because it scared me to release this episode. It's one episode. Dame Stephanie Shirley also scared me because it really ventured far from format. But they've both so far been sort of a success. But it's also, I think I just have a really awesome audience. And they really, they'll allow me to try new things, which is really cool. And so I appreciate that. And it really means a lot to me that I can really try things that actually do kind of scare me to publish.
Yeah. And so you are a marketer. Totally. You're you get the fact that you have to connect with what people want, but then you have to do something that's unique to you. And that's to me, that's marketing. That's what makes things remarkable is you have your own set of experience and your own set of, you know, your perspective and your view on life, and you're taking that. So I think that's great. Mm-hmm. You've mentioned you have a great audience, and it sounds like it. How do you connect with your audience, or how did you go from, I guess, having them be a passive audience where they're just listening and downloading and subscribing, to better understanding, and what are you doing to kind of corral them and put some structure into that?
I give them complete and utter access to me in every way I'm at. I was literally yesterday, I was sick. We had just moved in, and then I got sick in the afternoon and felt terrible. I lied down for a nap, and then I woke up to two texts from different listeners. Cause every once in a while I forget I do this sort of, but I give out my cell phone number and tell
people
to text me. I say, don't call me. Cause like, even when my mom calls me, I don't answer. I'm terrible at answering the phone.
Yeah. I hate answering the phone.
Yeah. But text me and I'll totally answer it. I wanted like a picture of like where you're listening. And so I get these wacky things. So it started off really, it's building relationships, right? One person at a time. The whole one is better than zero. It's don't focus on building an audience of 1,000 people. Focus on building this one person audience across multiple people eventually, but worry about the one person. And open yourself up. You have to do it. You cannot expect to build a big email list or build a big audience to your podcast if you're not willing to do the other side, your side of the relationship. You can't have a relationship with anybody in real life and not talk to them. Not be open. Like, if you met somebody and you started to be friends, well, you wouldn't start to be friends if you were like, well, I'm not giving you my email address. Well, I'm not going to give you myself. Well, I'm not going to talk to you if you ever ask me something. I'm going to ignore you. You know what I mean? It just doesn't make sense. You have to open yourself up and you have to go over the top responding and talking to people. This is completely not scalable. But I haven't really found where it's not scalable yet. I've got a fairly good size audience now and I can still manage it and I still love it. And it overwhelms me some days, but there's tips and tricks you can kind of once it gets to that point, but that's a good problem to have. So it's really just being human and just treating people like actual people. Like the people listening to your show are legitimate real human beings with you in their ears. And then they might get so inspired to actually write you an email. Sometimes the most heartfelt, crazy email about everything that's gone wrong in their life and is happening, and it'll like bring you to tears. And for you to ignore that or to not give them that access or just go to my contact form, it's like, what the hell am I? Just like a vendor who wants to sell you new pens? Like, come on, like john@hacktheentrepreneur.com. That's it. It's not that hard. Now it comes straight to my cell phone. I'll get that email and I'll respond to you as a human, not as a marketer, not as, oh, and did you check out my other episode? It's like, no, I never say that to people. They're already listening to me. And most people will not do that. Most people, and actually I got this from my first guest, my second interview, but my very first guest on Hack the Entrepreneur, Chris Brogan. And my first question, still at that time and still is what's the one thing you do that's allowed you to be successful? I didn't even get that right. But I don't have it in front of me. But he said, here's the trick. Nobody else does this, but I respond to people. When people email me or tweet me or Facebook me, I respond. Most people in this game will not respond to people because they want to act like they're too big and too good and too busy, or they just don't care. Mm-hmm. I respond. And that has built everything I possibly have. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. And so then I started focusing on just making sure to give out my email, making sure to give out my Twitter, making sure to give out my cell phone number. And I want you to reach out to me and I'm going to respond to you like a friend and like a human being, because that's what you are. And it doesn't sound scalable and I don't know how it really works, but all of a sudden it goes from doing that to one person a day, to five people a day, to 10 people a day, to thousands of people listening, because those people become, I guess, evangelists and just go out and talk about you all the time.
Sure.
Or it just, maybe there's something inherent where I know now that these people are out there and I'm having conversations with even three of them as I'm starting. And it really gives me confidence to do a better show because I know that those people are out there. And so it just makes the whole thing get better. You know what I mean? So I'm not sure exactly how or why it works, but for some reason it's gone from one person emailing me to literally tens of thousands of people listening to my show. And somehow I never stopped doing that one simple thing of responding to people.
Yeah, that's great. And as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about my background. I do a lot of teaching small classes and at small conferences and things like that. And it would be the same for me to, it'd be like if I walked out of the room without answering the questions of the 5 or 10 people at the end that come up to talk to you, and just answering those questions at the end, they feel a connection. You treated them like humans. And those are the people that come back the next time, right?
Exactly. And people, I don't know why we get, when we take it online, right? So five people come up to you after a talk and you're probably amazed by it. Like, this is freaking awesome, right?
Yeah.
But if you do a podcast and only five people come to you on Twitter or even one person, you're like, oh, whatever. It's only one person. I was only one person. Like, what do you, that's one person that I don't think I've ever listened to a podcast in my life and been so inspired that I've sat down and wrote somebody an email about it. That's amazing to me. That's like a really bold step. I've had people even tell me, like, I've never done this before. This makes me nervous to do this, but I need to tell you this. That's amazing. And you cannot, don't undervalue that. Don't think that, oh, well, I'll wait until my audience is big like John's is or Pat Flynn's is. It's like, well, it's never going to get there if you don't start with that one person. This is the same thing with email lists. Everyone's like, oh, how do I build a bigger email list? How many people are on your email list? 73 people. What's the last thing you ever emailed them? I've never emailed them. There's not enough people on them. Are you kidding me? There's 73 people that said they want to hear from you in a room. Like, my office is a fairly decent size. If I had 73 people in here, you wouldn't be able to breathe.
Yeah.
If all those 73 people were in here and I said nothing to them for 6 months, that would be really friggin' awkward.
And they gave you their email address.
Exactly. That would be so awkward and weird. But somehow when it's online, we just look at it as numbers and not as people. I mean, you screw up. You never go from 73 to 73,000 because you screwed up the first 73. Sorry, that's how it is.
Yeah, treat no, that's great.
People like they're golden because they are. They're human beings. They're real people that are into your stuff. And even if there's only seven of them, friggin' put your heart and soul into the next email you write them, because you won't get to 70 from seven if you don't do that. You won't get from 70 to 7,000.
Yeah, that's great.
The way it works.
Yeah, that's awesome. Do you mind sharing just a little bit about how your numbers have changed from you've been at it a year now, and you don't have to give us exact figures, but I'm just out of curiosity, kind of where did you start? Like, what kind of downloads were you seeing early on, and maybe where are they now? What ballpark?
My first month, so I launched September 5th. September last year, I did 2,700 and something downloads. Mm-hmm. The next month, I did 27,000 something. And then I believe I did 50,000, and then it fell apart to like 20. And I went through this huge dip for like 3 months. I can't, even looking back now, I don't even know why I didn't stop, but I didn't. But because that whole like new and noteworthy, the whole promotion within iTunes stops after 8 to 10 weeks.
Yeah.
And then it drops off, and then it's like, okay, now, so I go from 2,000 downloads a day to 200 a day. But it's consistent, but it's small, or it seems small, but it's no, that's 200 people that are actually listening now. That's awesome. That's what I gathered from iTunes. Very cool. And then last month, August of this year, was the first month I broke 100,000 downloads in a month.
That's awesome.
Which blew me away. Yeah, it's amazing. It's like, wow, huh, I'm not sure. And it looks like this month I'll do a little bit better than that again. But I mean, like my email list, I just broke 1,000 people on my email list. I don't use lead magnets or whatever people call them. I don't try and trick people into getting, not that there's bad, but I don't want just a large email list. I don't want to just brag that I have this massive email list of people that don't care about me. I have just over 1,000 people. Like I literally broke 1,000 a couple weeks ago. I think I have 1,050 today, I saw. And because I get a daily email from MailChimp, it tells me. But
yeah, I do too.
But I get like 53 to 62% open rate on an email. And I send out one email every Sunday, and I literally write it that day as I'm about to send it with something I'm thinking about or working on or that will help propel you through the week. And that's all I want. And I just want those people. I've only sold them a bit on the Showrunner podcasting course. Other than that, it's just me working and it's them being able to respond. Sometimes I get overwhelmed with responses on Sunday. That's when I know I've hit something right. And it's awesome. It's amazing. But so those are the numbers. Those are the exact numbers. And yeah,
that's great. Thank you for sharing that with us. And that's congratulations again. That's a really steep curve. That's great. Are you letting people know about your new episodes through your email list, or just letting them know about your thought on Sundays?
Actually, I just started because I have heard from a lot of people that they want email updates. So now on my site, you can actually subscribe to the RSS. But I release 3 episodes a week, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday. And because it's 3 a week, and because when you get on my email list, I'm literally saying, I just want you to get my best writing every single week. Literally from me. I don't want to then bombard you with 3 emails a week because that's not what I promised to give you. So now I've started separate emails where you can literally get just the feed and it just comes through the episode. It's not me writing it. It's not that. And we put that up 2 weeks ago. My developer did. So there's only like less than 5 people on each one so far. I haven't even mentioned that I have it. It's just on the site now and that'll start building. I just thought that nobody would want it because it's 3 a week.
Right.
But people do, and there's the choice of you can get it when it comes out live to your email, or else on Saturdays you get a compilation email with all 3 episodes there. So,
yeah, no, I think it's a good idea, and I'm on your Showrunner list, so I get those email notifications as well to kind of remind me of what shows or what's been released and what's happening over there. And so let me transition, if you don't mind, just for a few more minutes. How did you get connected with the folks at the new Rainmaker or Rainmaker Digital, formerly Copy Blogger Media, and Jared, how did that come about?
Rainmaker Digital. I have to write that down. last night, Jared and I had to record a new showrunner episode. This is behind the scenes for you.
Yeah.
And I had to call them the artist formerly known as Copy Blog. And all I could come up with, but I'm like, I honestly don't know what they're called anymore. So Rainmaker Digital, it just changed at the beginning of this month. Copy Blogger is one of the things that got me going in online business. I've admired their work literally for years. That's why Brian Clark was like number three on my list of people I needed to talk to. And I had emailed Brian last July, and he's terrible at email like I am. So it got missed apparently. So I didn't want to ask him again. It just, whatever. I didn't even get a response. Whatever. I just got other people then, right? But he was following me on Twitter. And then in like January or February, he direct messaged me on Twitter. He's like, I hate to say this, but I'm feeling kind of bad and left out that I haven't been asked to be on your show yet. And I'm like, you're kidding me, man. I said, check your email right now. And I forwarded him the email from July. He's like, oh, I totally did not see that. I feel terrible. So I was like, all right. So I'm like, let's get on the show. And so he came on the show like the following week, did a cool interview. And literally the second I said, okay, we're off, he was just like, okay, I haven't thought about this, but we're starting up a podcast network in a couple of months called Rainmaker FM, and you should be on it. I'm like, oh, okay. He's like, seriously, I haven't told anybody this. I didn't even plan this, but that was a cool interview. That was fun. You should be on. And so that was it. I was one of the two shows that were non-copy blogger people when Rainmaker launched. And then before actually Rainmaker even launched, then Brian called me one day and asked if I'd thought about doing a podcasting course, which I really hadn't. But he introduced me to Jared, said that they've been getting lots of questions by their audience asking about podcasting. He's like, obviously, you know how to podcast, and you did it without any help. You did it all by yourself and made it work really well. So I think you guys could work well together. So how about we do it? And I was like, is this a question or is this like rhetoric? Obviously, the answer is yes. Let's do this. So we just partnered on it, and yeah, we created a course, and it's been great.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you've I guess you had about what, 6 months of experience or 9 months of experience at that point when you helped create the course?
Yeah, it would have been 9 months. 9 months experience.
Yeah. And well, that's fascinating. How did that go? The course creation, working with Jared and the other folks over there.
Well, I'd never created a course before. So I was like, anything you've never done before, if that's creating a podcast or software or anything, it's like you're just staring at this like idea of this massive thing you have to do. And it's overwhelming, right? So then it was like 3 weeks of that, me just in my office, like, I have no idea. I got this massive course I have to create. But then it was like, okay, John, how do you do anything else? You break it down into 10 small parts or 100 small parts, however many you have to make it digestible. And that's all I did. I literally took yellow post-it notes, just started across my desk, broke it all down, started moving things around. What else do I need? What else do I need? And then I looked at it and I was like, yeah. And then I moved it to a Trello board. Trello's free software that's kind of like post-it notes, but online.
Yep.
And set up a Trello board. Then I sent it to Jared. I was like, how does this look? And he was like, that's awesome. And then we literally just marked off in colors who was going to do which videos, which changed as we went. Because then it would be like, I would do one and be like, no, I can do this one really well too now as a follow-up. And we just went for it. Literally, the creation took a couple of weeks once we actually got over ourselves. And that was it. Jared did like the technical stuff. Like the technical stuff in the course, because I'm really no good with feeds. I don't get it. I don't understand that part.
Right.
I don't understand microphones, really. I have a microphone that Pat Flynn bought my daughter. And Flynn bought my daughter, and that's all I've ever used. I think I understand the interviewing. I think I understand the marketing. I think I understand the launching. I think I understand building an audience. But I don't understand the technical side of it at all. And I don't do any of it myself. So luckily I had Jared to do all that and take that. But it's been a huge success. And it's really helped my podcasting even a lot. Just dealing with and getting to now relate with so many hundreds of other people doing podcasts. It's really made me step up my game, and it's good. It's great.
That's awesome. And I've got another follow-up question, but I want to slip on this tangent over here. So Pat Flynn bought your daughter a microphone. Can you give me?
I always just try to let that slide, and no one's ever let me let that slide. So this goes back to the Philippines, Chris Ducker's conference. My daughter, who was with me at the time, she was 9 at the time. She started a blog on our trip. We were on a trip for about 8 weeks. Went to Japan and then through the Philippines before the conference. And so she started a blog, and it was really adorable and stuff. And it kind of got word around the conference because she had been doing it for a few weeks at that point.
Right.
She was there. She's the only kid there, of course. And she's blogging, right? And so at one point, we're eating lunch in this little room, and I look over at like the stage, and there's John Lee Dumas and my daughter Sadie just like sitting there chatting. I'm like, it's so hilarious. I have a picture of it. It's the funniest thing. And of course, what's he saying? Oh my God, you have to start a podcast. You'll light this world on fire and make $1 million probably. But no, it was amazing. He was just like, I have this training course for it. Podcasters Paradise. I'll let you in. Answer any questions you need. You should start a podcast based on your traveling and stuff, Sadie. So which was cool. Everybody saw it, right? Everybody's like, oh my God, we took pictures and that's amazing. Sadie's going to start a podcast. So the next day at lunch, this is to make a short story long. The next day at lunch, we're just like standing in line getting our food. And then Pat's right behind us. And he's just goes to Sadie. He's like, Sadie, I really do agree with John that you should start a podcast. And if you want to, just tell your dad. And when you get home, he'll email me and tell me your address. And I'll send you all the gear that you need to start. Cause I think that you would be amazing at podcasting as well. And she was just like, whoa. And then Pat talked to me after, and he's just like, asked me what kind of gear. Cause he's like, well, you got to start a show too, John. And you had one, but what's the gear you have? And I told him what I have. He's like, okay, so I'll set you guys up with like real setup, like the exact setup I use. And then you can use it too. And Sadie and you guys can both rock out. And that was it. So as soon as we got home, he sent it. It all appeared magically from Amazon in different places, and that's it. And then she did a show, and she made it to 15 episodes. And then she got sidetracked because she wrote a novel last November.
Actually, because that happens all the time.
Well, that was because of another interview I did with Joanna Penn, who's an independent author in the UK. She heard about Sadie, and then she was like, can you give me your email address? It won't be creepy. And then she emailed her and told her about this month-long thing in the UK called NaNoWriMo, which is National Novel Writing Month. And so her and Sadie started emailing back and forth. And then Sadie ended up writing a novel like a few months later during that NaNoWriMo, which now she's going to use her podcasting gear. She just decided last week on our road trip that she's going to actually do an audiobook version of her book.
Awesome. That's
with
awesome.
Her book is available on Amazon. You can buy it. She sells copies of it. It's crazy.
Yeah. What's the name of it? I'll include it in the show notes.
So the podcast is called Between Two Worlds. And how do I not know her book? That's crazy. I can't remember her book.
Yeah,
I'm terrible. Worst father ever. What's cool is I can actually go to Amazon. I can type in her last name.
You can look it up.
And the only thing that comes up is her. A Dream Inside a Dream by Sadie Nastor.
That's awesome.
Oh, she's got 12 reviews. Jeez.
And how old is she?
She's 10 now.
Awesome. So yeah. we're gonna have to keep in touch because I've got an 8-year-old who sounds like a very similar personality, wants to explore and build things and create and innovate. So I'm gonna try to do my best to encourage him to go that route.
That's awesome. City would love to talk to him.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. So let me get back to the showrunner. Just a couple more questions. I don't want to keep it too long.
Yeah.
How did you come up with the business arrangement side of the showrunner? Can you give me any details about how you decided to, I mean, was it a revenue sharing or were you getting paid to help produce the course or did you, you know, how did that
No,
come
I
about?
Got paid nothing. It was just strictly a revenue sharing,
okay.
A really, really generous revenue sharing. And for like the legal people out there and everything, there's absolutely no contract signed. it was literally just, it's kind of how I've done business. Anytime I've got involved with contracts, it always never goes anywhere or it just gets stuck with lawyers and costs a bunch of money. So it just trust. It was literally Brian and myself just on a phone, blah, blah, blah. And then that was it. We just agreed. Yep, let's do it. And that was it. Never talked to him again until after we launched it, actually.
Wow.
Just talked to Jared, and they gave us full access to like designers and developers and administration people to like get test, like everything done. It was amazing. So we really just had to create the course and kind of scope it out in our heads. And then we had this brilliant team that made it look awesome and work awesome. And yeah, so that's that was great. It. And it was literally just, I guess, a handshake without actually ever meeting in person. And yeah.
Virtual handshake.
Yeah, and it's worked out better than anything I've ever done. So,
and I know you're, it's currently closed. You can't enroll. But about how many people have you gotten in this first wave?
I believe we just passed 300 people.
Great.
I believe so. I wish I should have got numbers for that. But,
No. I just wanted a rough idea.
Yeah. It's just over 300 somewhere, and I don't know exactly where, but it's been amazing. It's been great. So I'm really, really happy.
Yeah, that's. Do you have plans for additional follow up or?
Yeah, I don't know. It's getting weird. Rainmaker Digital is doing some things, so and some of it's out of some of it's out of my hands. It's all out of my hands, actually. So we'll have to see where it goes. It might be getting a big revamp. Like it's going to carry on. We're still doing it, and Jared and I have some ideas, but it might become part of something bigger, which I'm not sure about yet.
Okay, well we'll hush that and move on.
The artist formerly known as Copy Blogger.
So do you have maybe two more questions here? Do you have anything that you've tried to help build your audience or your podcast that just hasn't worked, or you know, anything we can learn from a mistake?
Oh, mistakes. Oh boy. I typically just make mistakes. And a big mistake is failing to stick to a regular schedule, which I did a lot up until June. Actually, June was even one of the worst months ever, because I was preaching to like stick to a schedule, and then I really didn't stick to a schedule, and then I pushed it to really not stick to a schedule, meaning when I say I'm going to publish Monday, Tuesday, Thursday to my audience, you have to publish those days.
Right.
So then in June, I had missed some days because I was traveling and stuff. And then in June, I was missing some days and I thought I saw a decline in downloads. So I decided to really push it just to kind of experiment on myself. And it absolutely, like by July, my numbers were horrid. Like they were less than half of what I did in August once I started. Through the end of June to July, I kept a solid schedule all through August. And then August, as I said, did my biggest numbers ever. And I will do better this month. And I have not missed an episode now in, I guess, like 40-something episodes. Like, so this is moving into the third month. But that's the biggest one. It's all part of that relationship and trust, right? If yeah. I tell you it's going to be there. And people have way too many options for podcasts. So if John's not there on Thursday today, just because I don't even know why, or I don't care why. He's not there like he said he was going to be. I'm going to go over to Pat Flynn and listen to his show.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, once you listen to Pat Flynn's show once, if you haven't, you're not going back to John Nastor.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is because Pat's awesome.
Yeah. No, and I've heard people say, so it's nice to know that it's not just a theory, but it's fact that if you mess up your schedule, then you're literally going to see the numbers drop.
Oh, it was terrible. Like, it was bad. Like, to the point where, okay, I can't do that anymore. And it was done as an experiment at the end because I really did want to verify that. And, yeah, it's terrible. It's just inconsistency, right? So it's inconsistency in downloads. People just don't want them. And so that's it.
So where is Hack the Entrepreneur going from here? Any immediate plans, or are you just staying the course for the foreseeable future?
I'm writing a book that's going to come out hopefully in the next couple months, writing quote unquote, a book. It's going to be a book, which I've been told by probably 30 different people now, listeners, that I need. It's going to be a book of the top 50 hacks from my show based around the five hack, subjects that I have, like that I sort of, on my site, I separate everything into being wrong, fears, habits, mindset, or ideas.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take the top 50. I'm going to take 10 from each of those. And then on the show after the hack, I do like my little essay thing. So I'm going to clean those up, and it's going to be just kind of a resource where you can kind of go through. I have this great content, these brilliant people I've got to talk to, but it gets messy when you have approaching 150 episodes that it's hard for people to know where to start. So this will be a place for them, with an intro and an outro. And it's been almost completely laid out by amazing audience members who have just kept emailing me stuff and like, oh, you should do this. And so many of them have emailed me at this point that it's like, I literally have to do it. So it's my September project, is to get this book together and get it out and then kind of see where it goes from there. Other than that, it's, I think, stay the course. And then, probably I'm going to get into a product or something myself with Hack the Entrepreneur. But I'm not sure exactly where that's going yet.
Yeah, I was going to ask, now that you've heard so many entrepreneurs give you hacks and insight, does it stir up something in you? Are you looking to use their hacks and start a business now?
Yeah, but at the same time, I've gone through in the last year this weird transformation from just online entrepreneur who nobody knew to being known, which is what I wanted to do. Like, that was kind of my thing. If people could actually know me, would be cool. But now I'm becoming known as a podcaster, which was hard for me. It was a hard struggle. It's like, no, I make software. I don't podcast. Mm-hmm. I have a podcast just to talk to people. But now I'm realizing that I'm actually kind of good at it, from the humblest Canadian way I could possibly say that.
Sure.
And I'm really, really, really enjoy it. And I get paid to do this now, like with sponsors. It blows my mind. So I'm cool with it. And I'm kind of, any business I now want to create or ever think of creating is all based around Hack the Entrepreneur. My ultimate goal, from the humblest Canadianist way, that I've only ever told my mastermind guys, is that I want to turn Hack the Entrepreneur into like a media empire. If I can, I want to create an amazing blog around it, an amazing podcast around it. And I want other people have asked to write on my site, stuff like that. And I just haven't done it yet. I haven't known the correct path, which I guess none of us do until we do it. So I have big sort of goals for Hack the Entrepreneur at this point.
That's great.
Just like any other business, I don't know exactly how I'm going to get there yet.
Yeah. Well, I encourage you to do it. You can build it. Build what you want to build, right?
Yeah, totally.
Well, I don't want to leave without asking you a little bit about the sponsorship. So how did you, I know you said now it's, I guess it's your full-time gig. How did you get your first sponsor? How did that play out?
It was weird. It was like 6-7 weeks into podcasting. And this was like last late October. And one weekend I was like, I think my audience, like numbers were going up. It was foolish because it was too early in that way. And I shouldn't, but I was just thinking over the weekend, like I should approach sponsors and try and find somebody, because I was doing the editing myself. Mm-hmm. And although it was good enough and I could play with the format and I got to a format I wanted, I'm not really good at making it sound really good, or I don't have the patience. So I needed to hire somebody. And I needed to hire somebody to help me find more guests, because I was doing a lot of shows and I ran out of that list of 30 by now. So I needed a sponsor to pay for those things. And I literally got approached the following Monday. I got 3 different emails from companies. I had talks with all of them, and the best one was FreshBooks. They're Canadian like me. I used their product. I liked it. And so I said, I'm going to have just one sponsor. I'll put a banner out on my site. I'll give them an ad at each show, everything. But I don't want to change. I didn't want to just go to random sponsors all the time yet. One thing, because it's a lot of work, and one thing, because I didn't think my audience was ready for it, which they weren't. So FreshBooks just signed on for 3 months. And then 2 months into that, they signed on for another 3 months once that one ended. They're actually still signed on now, but we went from around March or April, so about 6 months into it, I started getting a backlash from my audience. Like, all right, John, we get it. And we kind of hate FreshBooks now. Because that was it, right? It was like literally every episode, 3 episodes a week. Like, okay, and FreshBooks. It's like, John, we get it. Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. And FreshBooks kind of got the same feeling. So around Christmas at the time, midroll.com, which does, they're like an intermediary. They'll, mm-hmm. they take sponsors and they give them, they sell them to you. And so you can sign on with them, which they only have, I think, six or five business podcasts, which is like I'm with Pat Flynn, John Lee Dumas, James Altucher. It's amazing. Like, and then there's me. But they asked me around Christmas, actually, if I would join. And I turned them down. I actually didn't really know who they were at the time. Huh, I was like, yeah. Nope, I have FreshBooks. I'm signed on. I only want one. And they're like, okay, well, if you ever want to, then by all means, get back to us. So I learned a lot more about podcasting after that. Then I started the course. And then I was like, okay, this FreshBooks thing happened. And I didn't want to start finding my own. So I went back to Midroll. And we went into talks for about a month. And then I signed on. And late July, I started doing ad spots for them. They've filled me up till, I think, November. My inventory is booked till right now. Hmm. And yeah, they're awesome. They get me great sponsors. They deal with all the money. They just pay me out once a month. And it's easy. They give me the ads. They give me all of it. So that's it. And so now I literally, this pays for it. This is it. It's weird. So now I literally can't actually miss an episode anymore because I'm sold out for three episodes a week.
You're contractually bound to keep going.
Yeah, no, exactly. Which is good, right? It really, it's also like when I joined Rainmaker.fm, it wasn't just me by myself. You know, you can let the production slip a bit. It's like, whatever. Right. It's just, it doesn't matter. But then all of a sudden it's like, no, actually. And I can't let grammar drop on my show notes or anything because it's going through Rainmaker, which is Copyblogger, which has all these people like, no, this, you have to make this better. It's like, oh, okay. It's really made me step up my game. Midroll has now made me step up my game further, which is cool if you can do it yourself. And I guess I had to do it to a certain level or else Copyblogger wouldn't have taken me on, or Rainmaker Digital now wouldn't have taken me on. And Midroll wouldn't have taken me on. I guess I had enough level of professionalism, but still, it still upped me even further when I did join them. So
you're, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Sponsors are great, but they're also a pain in the butt. But but it's, I get so many emails about it now because I'm one of the few business ones on Midroll. So I get a lot of emails from people like, how do you get into that? And it's like, dude, you're on episode 3. Like, it's way too soon to be worrying about this. Or I'm doing super well on like week 4 or New and Noteworthy. I have all these downloads. I'm like, yes, but in 6 weeks, it's going to just fall to crap. It does, because you're going to lose all that. And then you got to power through. Once you power through that, then Midroll might listen to you. But I know because I've had Midroll tell me that, I mean, don't give out our email addresses. Don't. But I mean, I've already told you, Norbert, you can figure it out yourself.
Yeah. So your show is hosted on Rainmaker FM, but you deal with the sponsors directly?
Yeah, I have no contract with Rainmaker FM. Okay. I own all my stuff. They just promote me to their audience.
Gotcha.
But I deal with all my sponsors. That was that first, right after our interview, that conversation, Brian was like, I don't want to like take money from you or control you in any way. I just literally think you're doing something cool. I would like to have another show that's not Copyblogger on the network when it launches. Mm. And I would love to build your audience and help you build your audience for you. I was like, wow, how can I say no to that? Right.
Yeah. Very cool. So one last question about sponsorship. I'm not interested in your numbers now, but in the early days, as you know, you're already getting emails from people. What do you think someone could expect that's getting a few thousand downloads a month as far as how much money they can make from sponsors?
So like when you're approaching guests, leave numbers out of it. When you're starting out, once like with Midroll and stuff, it's all numbers. It's literally a CPM, which is cost per thousand. And there's no getting away from that. But originally, I actually could get more money for the amount of downloads I had because I made like a package deal, right? This is business. This is marketing. This is just selling something 101, right?
Right.
Like create something really valuable. If your audience numbers aren't that valuable, you don't think to you because they're not that big, then don't mention them. Just talk about how you have this really engaged audience. They're great. They're this, like really narrow them out and show, even if it's not exactly right, you at least show that you have thought about who exactly your audience is and why it will work with this company. Give them ad spots. I gave them a sidebar ad, FreshBooks, on my site. And I was like, nobody else is going to get that. You guys get that all the time. I get quite a few visitors to my site. I gave them text ad in each show notes, and I gave them sponsorship there. And I said, you're my only sponsor. So even to this day, we're on this podcast to your audience. I'm talking about FreshBooks.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell me there's not value to that. There's absolutely value. And FreshBooks knew that. And FreshBooks, they even admitted like 6 months later, they're like, yeah, we knew we were taking sort of a chance on you. Your show was brand new, but we thought you were doing something really cool and that it would go and we could grow with it. And we were happy to do that because you gave us so much exposure and you still do. Do that. If you're out there thinking of sponsorships, make a cool package. And like with your audience, build a true relationship. Don't just think about it as money. The money's great, but that's not what you're doing it for. You're doing it so that your sponsor has to win. Your sponsor has to win as much as you do. Actually, they have to win more. If they're paying you more money than they're getting in return somehow, then, and that can be just through branding. It doesn't have to be through direct sales, but branding of me talking about it everywhere, then they won't keep sponsoring you. Until they're getting more value for the dollars they're giving you, they will not keep spending with you. And why do I want to have to find a new one sponsor, my only sponsor, every month or every 2 months or every 3 months? I'd rather get a little bit less money. So it's the whole thing of just make a win-win situation for you and your sponsor. Give them as much as you can. And if you tell them you're going to talk about them everywhere you go and talk about how this sponsorship works, then do that. Don't not do that. Don't under-deliver, over-deliver on everything and build a real relationship. The girl at FreshBooks, which I don't want to tell you her name because you'll be able to find her email address.
Yeah, that's fine.
I can literally just email her at any point, any time of day or night. And if she's awake, she'll get it on her phone and she'll respond right to me and give me anything I need. We have an amazing relationship. When I go to Toronto, I see her. It's cool. It's awesome. And we each kind of took a chance on each other. I went sort of lower pricing than I thought was right. They went higher pricing than they thought was right. And we grew together. And you can do this. And this, I didn't have big numbers at the time. I just had a willingness to really set up a winning relationship for both of us. And then I stuck to what I said I was going to do.
Yeah. Can you share that first, just your first package, what that number was?
My first package, I think I was getting $2,000 a month. I don't actually know. I think it was $2,000 a month. It might have actually been a little bit less. That was 12. Yeah, that was when I stepped up to 3 episodes a week. I'm trying to think on my feet, but I think it was that.
So you were putting out about 12 episodes a month.
Yeah, I think that's when I stepped up. That was the whole turning point where it's like I either got to quit this or I got to keep this momentum going and push it as hard as I can. And I decided to push it as hard as I could. So I stepped up from 2 episodes a week to 3, and I've just focused on becoming a podcaster and doing as good as I could. Maybe it was like $1,850 or something, but it was, yeah. So that's what it was. And now I get paid like 3 or 4 times that.
Yeah, that's a great,
which is great. Or more. But it's just where it needed to start. And now, unfortunately, once you get to a certain sort of level, then it's strictly CPM at that point, which is cost per thousand. Typically you're going to get people if you email somebody asking if they want to sponsor your show, they're going to say, how many downloads do you get? Totally fair enough question. Just do the politician thing. Just answer other questions. if you're asked a direct question, answer a whole bunch of other questions. Tell them about how awesome your audience is. Tell them about the engagement you get. Tell them about your email list if you want, and how you can, when you email those 78 people on your email list, that you'll also put a PS to your sponsor and thank them with a link. All those things help. Show that you care. Show that you want to help them and their business, and they will take you serious. It's just how it is. Maybe you're going to get less money than you expected, but one is better than zero. That counts for audience and that counts for dollars. I don't care if you're getting $10 a show and you were getting zero before, that's infinitely better. It's just the way it works. You got to start somewhere and just work your way up. I mean, trust me, even if you get $50 an episode and the first day you get paid $50 to put out an episode of your podcast, feels awesome. Feels really awesome when you get to go out for dinner that night and be like, man, podcasting just paid for this. That's amazing. It's an amazing feeling. And it's small, but it'll grow from there, and it really incentivizes you and gets you that feeling of, okay, this is how it works, and now continue building. One is better than zero. One is better than zero.
That's great. So my last question for you is, what is the most remarkable podcast that you listen to?
So I just did a crazy road trip last week across the country. So I listened to so many podcasts. I'm going to go with a new podcast that literally, I think on episode 11, called Question of the Day. And it's hosted by Stephen Dubner of Freakonomics fame.
Yeah.
And James Altucher of James Altucher fame. So they're good friends. They literally get together in a studio daily in New York. And one of them just, it's like a 10 minute or 11 minute episode, beautifully produced by the studio. James has a hard time being reined in, but Stephen does a great job. And literally just one of them asks the other one a question, and the other person doesn't know what the question is when they sit down, and they just give an answer. And it's completely random, from business stuff to just general life to games, just weird. And it's super short, produced really, really well. They're actually, they must be part of Midroll because they have all the same sponsors I do. And they, in a short episode, they do, Stephen does 2 ad spots, but he does them really well. And he's really making me step up my game for how ads are read, and which is good for you. If you're thinking of doing sponsorships, learn to really put your personality into these ads because it works better. And therefore you can earn more money from it because they earn more money. Your sponsor does. Right. So for that alone, just for the ad spots, it's totally worth it. But it's called Question of the Day, Stephen Dubner and James Altucher.
That's great. I'll check that out. And lastly, where would you like to send people to that want to learn more about you and what you're up to and keep up with you?
If they're on Twitter, Twitter's amazing. So at John Nastor, which is JONNASTOR. If you're not on Twitter, you should be on Twitter. But if you don't want to listen to me, then go to hacktheentrepreneur.com. You'll see my pretty face up there and a place to put your email. Put your email in there. And then you'll get a welcome email, the only automated email you'll get from that list, and hit reply to it. And that's where you can contact me. It comes straight to my phone.
Great. Excellent. John, this has been extremely helpful. And you've provided quite a bit of information. So I'm going to have a lot of notes to add at the end here. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. My pleasure, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of Remarkable, part of the Super Simple Podcast Network. As always, I truly appreciate you taking time to join me today, and I hope you took away some practical and useful tips that you can use. You can find my notes, relevant links, and a full transcript at supersimple.com/John. That's SUPERSIMPL.com/JON. This episode of Remarkable is sponsored by OnePriceTaxes.com. Life is full of surprises. Filing your taxes shouldn't be. OnePrice Taxes has been making online tax filing easy, accurate, and affordable since 2007. State returns are included for free, and unlike other online tax filing sites, there are no hidden fees guaranteed. When you visit OnePriceTaxes.com today, use code REMARKABLE to save 10% when you check out. Our theme music was composed by Julio Gonzalez at Zimer, spelled X-I-M-E-R. Zimer offers sound design and audio post-production for podcasts, video, audiobooks, game apps, and radio. Learn more or contact them today at Zimer.co. That's X-I-M-E-R.co. And if you'd like additional marketing resources, early access to my free podcast marketing course, and to be notified when I release future episodes, head on over to theremarkablepodcast.com. That's it. Thanks again for listening to Remarkable.